Thanks, darling.
In an effort to lessen distraction to others and to respect our speakers, we ask that you please take a moment before to silence and put away your cell phones and other electronic devices. In addition, we ask that you only have kosher approved food and drink to respect our host, the temple. My name is Christina, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Institutions does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card and safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. John will read the steps.
John, alcoholic.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, John. The format of this meeting is typically two 10-minute speakers followed by our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Tonight, we only have one 10-minute speaker because immediately following the meeting tonight, we're going to be having a sharing session on the start time of the meeting, the topic being the start time of the meeting. It was brought up in our group inventory in the fall and the subcommittees that followed, or specifically in the subcommittees that followed, that the group would like to talk about the start time of our meeting of this tonight. So, or, you know, going forward. So please stick around after tonight's meeting for that. If you are a home group member, please stay and share. And so we modified tonight's meeting format so that we could get to that earlier rather than later. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statement of unity and anonymity and therefore ask all of our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Ivory.
Hello. I'm just going to turn on my timer here. Yeah. Hi guys, my name is Ivory and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ivory.
So my sober date is the February 17th, 2023. So I just got a year a couple of weeks ago. it has been a really long road getting there. So first of all, I was born and raised in Myanmar, Yangon, Myanmar. And I grew up there, and I am an only child to two older parents who had me in their 40s. So I honestly don't know whether if it's being an only child or the alcoholism, where the selfishness and self-centeredness is like all centered around. ever since I was young, like first time going to school, like right off the bat, like I felt like I didn't fit in, and I didn't. I had a really hard time making friends, and that was like something that I really paid attention to throughout my life. And I mostly stuck around with my parents. They were kind of like all I had and all I really needed. But then when I was seven, there was a really traumatic event when the Burmese version of the KGB took my dad away. And then like a couple of weeks later, my mom got taken away too. And like I found myself really alone. And it like really like shook me into like the trauma response. Basically, like ever since then, like I've felt like I've been like running around between like either fight or flight or freeze response like throughout my life, and like my nervous system has been like kind of been in shock all throughout, and it left me in a position where I constantly thought that like I was a victim in like every single situation that like I experienced for the rest of it, even when I wasn't. Yeah, even though they did come back and like my family was all together, things were never really the same. Like my parents fought all the time, and I felt even more isolated, not having like many friends at school and like not having the parents that I grew up with anymore. I retreated into myself and like became much more isolated, started really trying to just like escape reality. The only ways I knew how, it started with like, you know, just like reading a lot of books, like watching a lot of TV, just like doing whatever I can to get out of my own head and the way that I felt. I also got really, I dove myself into everything that I did. So I was doing particularly well at school and like was very well-rounded as a result. But then I adopted that like work hard, play hard mindset very early on throughout my life. And I moved to the American International School back home in about the fifth grade. And even though I had a really hard time fitting in then, I became very, very obsessed with fitting in with people, making friends, like being popular. And as a result, I got my very first alcohol poisoning when I was in the eighth grade. it was like one of my very first times that like I started, like it was one of the only times that I had drank unsupervised. And so like I drank an entire bottle of Peach Malibu and ended up at the hospital. Like at the doctors there thought I was like actually ODing from something else. That was like how the state that they found me in. But that didn't really stop me from drinking. Like it just made me think like I better change the way that I was drinking. And for a long time, I really got along with just really controlling my drinking. And I even thought that like I could like outdrink everyone else. Like I was like, oh, maybe that was a good thing that that happened to me, you know, like it like built up my alcohol tolerance or something. And I was like really proud of that. And in high school, like I continued to be like really well-rounded, like made a lot of friends and like all these things. So like it seemed on the outside that like nothing was going wrong. But then inside, like there were a lot of issues. Like at home, like I constantly fought with my parents just to be able to like go out and like party, and like just thought that they were in the way of me getting what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was get out of myself and get drunk and like just do whatever I wanted. And I discovered other drugs in the 12th grade, and that was really the beginning of the end. It just like made everything just so much faster for me to like get to my bottom. And I finally achieved it during like the sophomore year of college. I moved out here for college in 2015, and my freshman year went fine, but then like in my sophomore year, I was going through a really particularly bad breakup, and then afterwards I also got sexually assaulted right like in the midst of all of it, and like I just went into a really dark spot and just retreated into myself and like really escaped myself using benzos and booze. And then that was like my go-to for a while, blew a lot of things up as a result, ended up being hospitalized and everything. But even then, I didn't discover AA then, and I'm actually pretty grateful for it, because the way that I was then, I would have never came back to AA if I was forced to somehow do all these things. But then I did discover AA in 2022. It was nothing short of a miracle. I ended up meeting someone who inspired me to check it out for myself, and I went to a few meetings at the end of the year, but I was never ready to commit to AA. I never really tried to even, like, I didn't even get a sober date. I got a 24-hour chip, but that was it. I didn't get a sponsor because I wasn't ready to let go of that lifestyle. So I eventually ended up, like, even though I had stopped doing drugs by that time for like a couple of years by then, I ended up doing all those drugs again, especially because I was trying to stop. Like, I recognized that the more I try to stop drinking, every single time I said that this was going to be the last day, I ended up drinking more than ever on that day. And like, I ended up like going back into that lifestyle that I was like living around my rock bottom, actually. But then in January of 2023, I decided to stop drinking for myself. And I was able to stop drinking, but I didn't let go of weed. I tried to do it without AA. Miraculously, the only friend that I had made in AA actually reached out to me at the end of that month, and we met up. And at the end, she asked me, she told me that she was going to a meeting, and she said that I didn't have to come along with her, even though she was going. And because she said that I didn't have to go along with her, I went along with her. And right at the end of that meeting, I walked up to the woman whose share I resonated with the most, asked her to be my sponsor, and I have been completely sober since after the day that I had met her. And I know that it's because I started working on the steps right away. I got a sponsor, and I finished it for the first time around the steps in November, but then I've gotten a new sponsor since. So I'm actually working on the steps again, and I am on the fourth step right now. Just wrote like my resentments out this entire week, so I have been very painfully aware of all of the mental loops that I tend to do, and like the ways that I like to fool myself that I deserved to drink all this time and everything like that. But I know for a fact that AA and everything that's brought me is like something that I can't fully describe, but it's like within these rooms of AA, the fellowship, and the person that I found within myself, it's allowed me to realize that everything that I have ever felt in my life, it's okay. Like, that it's okay. And that's not something that I could really, like, tell myself. That's not something that, like, I could fully accept, that like things were okay, that I was okay, and that life is okay, like no matter what. So I think I'll just end with that, even though my minute is short.
Thank you, Ivory. We will now observe the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. There's a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Katie has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous and except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before our personalities.
Thank you, Katie. Beacon Group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month, directly after the meeting, in person and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you will join us. Will all group members please raise their hand? Wonderful. And we encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro. Great. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Bob.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bob, and I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
I want to thank your group for asking me to come share my experience, strength, and hope with you. So I opened by saying I'm a recovered alcoholic. I could spend an hour just on that one sentence only. I'll spare you that and just touch on it briefly. If that word seems a little confusing or makes you a little bit uncomfortable, the word recovered, don't blame me. I didn't put it. It's in here. It says... Of Alcoholics Anonymous, we are men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's where I was before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But to me, it was a real state of mind and body because it was the only state that I have known for a very long time. I had a... My first step experience was on a gangster's bar, at a bar stool at a gangster's bar in South Boston. And it was a night like any other night, or I should say like no other night, whereas I went out drinking one day. So my sobriety date is November 12th, 1993. I truly believe it is my truth that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous the day before I died. That if I took another drink, back then, or I take another drink now, that booze is going to kill me. And if I don't believe that, then I haven't fully conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic and that I'm truly powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I had that first step experience, and it went something like this. November 11th was Veterans Day. And I went out drinking like normally on a Veterans Day at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I slid under the grate because he opened up for us. And I started drinking. And I drank all day long. And the sounds were muffled. I left that bar after a couple of drinks. And I went to another and another and another. And I drank all day long. And I couldn't seem to get drunk. The thoughts in my head wouldn't stop. And then at about 11 o'clock at night, because that's how I drink all day. At about 11 o'clock at night, I had a thought occur to me. And the thought was, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it anymore. I was at the jumping off place. I was at the crossroads that they talk about. I knew at that moment in my heart of hearts that booze was going to kill me. And unlike a lot of people around here, I didn't want to die before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to die. But I had a thousand times I had said to myself, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. Many of us want to stop. But having said that, I found myself at the bar with a bottle coming to my lips saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Until the bottle hit my lips and then it was off and running. See, I had no choice and I had no control. I had no choice at that point in my life in whether I drank or whether I didn't drink. I was completely powerless. And once I put that into my system, I have an allergic reaction where my body craves more and I can't stop drinking, even if I want to. Even if I want to. Something has to happen to stop me from drinking once I put alcohol into my system. I have to run out. I have to pass out, get knocked out, locked up. Something has to happen. I've never, that I can recall, in the middle of drinking, put it down and said, no, I'm good. It doesn't happen for me. I don't believe it has ever happened for me. So I thought I had a problem with alcohol. People were telling me I had a problem with alcohol my entire life. People, places, and things were trying to stop me from drinking from the very first time that I picked it up at 12 years old to set out to get drunk to the last time I put it down at age 27. First time I got drunk, it was at the football field. It was at the bleachers. It was some Millers and some Tango. And I got sick and I fell down and I got blood all over my nice new Irish knit sweater. And I went home and my father beat me up because I was 12 and I wasn't supposed to be drinking. But what happened to me was I couldn't wait to do it again. Because when I picked up that drink, something happened to me. Something happened to me. I got a sense of ease and comfort. I got a sense of ease and comfort. Prior to that, I was living not in ease. I was living in dis-ease. Okay? I came here and I thought I had a problem with booze. And some of you even told me I had a problem with booze. And you said, just don't drink, kid. Just don't drink. Well, the problem with that message is I drink no matter what. Don't drink no matter what. I drink no matter what. Just hang on. I let go. I drink with that kind of a message. What happened was I was sick before I picked up a drink. See, I used to think, I have to come around here for a little bit. I'm a quick study, right? So I heard that I have a threefold disease. Mental, physical, and spiritual. I was obsessing over alcohol. I got the allergy part where I picked up and I couldn't stop. And then the spiritual part was all the filthy, nasty, dirty things that happened to me after I drank, like losing relationships, getting arrested, almost burning my mother's house down, getting shot in the projects, all those types of things. That's what I thought my disease was like. It took a while for me to understand the true nature of my disease. Like I said, I was sick before I got here. My mother abandoned me when I was 2 years old. She abandoned me and my two sisters who had cystic fibrosis, who would later die at the ages of 5 and 6. They had to sleep with oxygen masks. They couldn't be out for more than 10 minutes. They had to come in and get oxygen, always at the hospital, and eventually that disease took them. I saw my grandmother, that sainted woman in my life, feed my grandfather through his back, because he couldn't eat because of the disease that he had, and I watched him die. I watched my great-grandfather die. I watched alcoholism run rampant in my house. I was molested. I was abused. I was bullied in my neighborhood because I had a lazy eye. And I was angry, and I was resentful. And I was full of shame, guilt, remorse, terror, frustration, bewilderment, despair. All before I picked up a drink. And at 12 years old, when I took that drink, I got a sense of ease and comfort. All that went away. I took the first deep breath I had taken in a long, long time. And that is what I was obsessing over. I came to find out I was obsessing not over alcohol, I was obsessing over the relief that I got from alcohol. Because when I wasn't drinking, I went right back to spiritually sick. Right back. Take away alcohol from me, and I was spiritually sick again. And I can't live like that. I cannot live like that. So I'm spiritually sick first. I obsess over the relief I get from alcohol. That's the mental. I put alcohol into my system. Allergic reaction happens, and I can't stop drinking even if I want to. I had a lot of horrible, horrible things happen to me while I was drinking. I mentioned some of them. It has absolutely nothing to do with my alcoholism. It's just what happens to me on Tuesday night when I drink. I get shot in the projects. That's what happens to me. Luckily for me, after that night, I had a power of example in my life. It was someone who was in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a member of my family, and I called him up for help, and I knew he would come because he was a member of my family. And he came to my house, and he told me his story, and which I thought I knew because I lived with him for most of my life. And, you know, he was a typical drunk living in Pine Street Inn, picking up cigarette butts, not paying his child support, robbing from everybody in the house, including me. And but this time he was living a different life. He was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew he would come help me, and that's exactly what he did. And he gave me a meaningless book. He gave me a meaningless book, and he showed me how to use it. And I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous the next night, which was November 12th, 1993, and I've been sober ever since. But, I did not think this was going to work for me. Because I could still read, and I saw the word God on your window shades and your Boy Scout banners, and I did not think this was going to work for me. Because I was violently opposed to the idea that there was a God. And even if there was a God, he wasn't going to help me. If you had lived the life I lived, seen the things I seen, did the things that I did, no God was going to help me. So I did not think this was going to work for me. However, I did have the only requirement for membership, which was the desire to not drink, which is really, for me, the desire not to die. Because I really didn't want to stop drinking, to tell you the truth. I did not want to stop drinking. I just wanted to stop feeling the way I was feeling when I was sober. And I didn't want to die. So I went to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to meetings and meetings and meetings and meetings, and I joined a group, and I got a sponsor, and I did all a bunch of things, and I was still thinking about drinking. I was still thinking about drinking until I went, a friend of mine I met from New York, he was a crackhead, and we were nothing alike. He was a Yankees fan. And he invited me to a meeting that they were having at this halfway house that he was in. I've never been to a detox. I've never been to a halfway house. Well, I've been to thousands of them, just only speaking. But he invited me to a meeting that they were having there. So I went there on a Saturday morning, and they were reading this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were on chapter 4, We Agnostics. And at that point, my sobriety changed, and my life changed. My life absolutely changed. Because finally, it was in there that it was revealed to me what my real problem was, right? Selfish, self-centeredness is the root of my troubles, right? Lack of power was my problem, right? But not only that, did they tell me what the problem was, they told me what the solution was. 10 pages later, they told me exactly where and how to find that power. It said, deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And it's only there that he can be found. It may be blocked by pomp, calamity, worship of other things. But if I clear away all those things that are blocking me from believing in or having a relationship with that God, then I too could recover. But really, what really got me, it was like thunderbolt. It was like the burning bush moment for me, right? Which never really happened. I read those words that said, who are you to say that there's no God? That I could have my own conception of God. That I didn't have to believe that you believe, because that's what I was hearing, believe that I believe. And people were talking about things that I didn't believe about. Matter of fact, I had such deep resentment against the word God and Jesus and Allah and all those other things that whenever that would happen, my back would tighten, I'd pucker. I was resentful. It was old ideas and belief systems that I had. It told me I had to cast all those things out. And it was at that moment that I became willing. I became willing to believe that maybe, just maybe, there might be something that could help me. And the reason that was because at that moment, I was not obsessing over alcohol. For the first time that I could remember, I was not obsessing over alcohol or anything to do with alcohol. And so I thought, okay, maybe this was it. I learned about the disease of alcoholism. I learned that it was a problem of self, that I was self-reliant, right? And step one, I learned what I was really powerless over. I was powerless over that obsession for the relief that I was getting. I was powerless over that allergic reaction that I had. There's nothing I can do about any of those things. And there's no power on this earth that can do anything about those two things. Nothing. If I couldn't stop drinking for the sainted woman who raised me, that woman who stood in front of me, it says frothy emotional appeal seldom suffice. What does that look like for me? When that woman is standing in front of me with tears in her eyes saying, why do you drink the way you drink? Why can't you be good? Why can't you only have a few? Why do you behave the way you behave? What's that time say? 10 minutes?
14 minutes and 25 seconds.
Thank you. I couldn't read it. That's why I asked. So when she said those things, I could give her one of a million excuses of why. In reality, I didn't know why. I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. The life I was living was the only life I knew. I was in delusion. I was in absolute delusion. But they said there's a way out. There was a way out. If I could be convinced that the life I was living on self-will was of no avail, no use to me, it was no good, then I could go on to another footing. See, I was stuck in self-will and self-knowledge. I tried to bend the will of mankind into getting what I wanted. Whether it was alcohol, drugs, sex, money, whatever it was, I tried to bend the will of mankind to getting what I want. And I would do anything to make that happen. Lie, cheat, steal, whatever it is. And believe all of it. And believe all of it. Because I needed that to be okay. But if I had become convinced that that wasn't going to work for me, then maybe I could step over the bridge of reason. Reason didn't work for me. But the bridge of reason was also blocked. It was blocked by resentment. Resentment is the number one offender. Why? Why? Because from it stems all forms of spiritual illness. When I get resentful, I get jealous, I get anxious, I get fearful. Everything just runs right down rampant. I get full of self. I have to be rid of that or else it kills me. Because if I have that within me, I need to get rid of it. And the only thing that ever worked for me was alcohol. The only thing that ever worked. So if I could clear away those things that were blocking me, then I could step from bridge to shore, right? So they showed me how to do that. Someone showed me how to do that, write down my resentments, go through the columns. I currently like the Big Book Awakenings format. That's what works for me best. And that's currently when I sit down with other men and women, that's the format we use for resentment. Like it or leave it, that's the way I do it. I love it. Because it gets to the fourth column for me. It gets to the fourth column. If I don't get to the fourth column, I might as well just throw that inventory in the trash. Because I've never really seen what my role in things were. Not that I'm to blame. Blame has nothing to do with it. It's a couple of words I take umbrage with in here. Blame is one of them. That's okay. I'm allowed. I'll keep coming. Maybe someday I'll write some inventory on the word blame, right? If I can get to the fourth column, it's easy to say why who I'm resentful at and why. That's easy. That's all selfishness anyways. But to then see the seven areas of self that affected and then what my role in it is, that's when I can then be free. So I did that inventory, and I became free. I became free. In fact, I left out one thing. I left out one thing in my inventory with my first sponsor, and that was the fact I've already told you tonight that I was molested. I could not bring myself to tell that man that. This man was a giant. He was the president of one of the largest unions on the East Coast. He was my sponsor, and I couldn't tell him that. I was too ashamed. So the next day, that same gentleman that brought me to that meeting, that crackhead, they had a list of priests that would do fifth steps, alcoholic priests that would do fifth steps. And I got one of those names, and I went over and I saw that priest, and I redid my fifth step with him. And I told him that. And I left there. And I didn't go to a priest because I'm religious. I went for a priest because I know they can't tell anybody. Right? That's why I went to a priest. I left there a free man. That doesn't bother me anymore. I immediately called my sponsor up and I said, I need to talk to you. I didn't share something with you. He says, no, you don't have to. I said, no, you don't understand. I do. And it doesn't harm me anymore. And it can never harm me again unless I let it. Never harm me again unless I let it. So then I got into, you know, they told me that, you know, now you have to change the person you're running. You know, what does that mean? For me, it meant that if I was now to be rid of all those things that I found objectionable to myself, what am I going to replace them with? I think some other literature, Drop the Rock, talks about the hole in the donut, right? What was I to become, that hole in the donut? So I had to replace those. See, I started drinking at an age when most young men are starting to develop character, 12 years old, right? 12, 13, 14 years old. We start to develop some type of character. Well, my character was that of an alcoholic. So at 27, I had to start all over again. And they offered me a solution to that, too. They said, well, why don't you try things like humility, honesty, love, kindness, forgiveness. And then they went on and told me that, you know, all those things, those dirty, filthy, rotten things that I talked about that happened to me and that I did while I was drinking, that I was to be held accountable for those things. So I had to make that list, and I had to go to those people. I had to seek those people out, and I had to sit down with them, and I had to tell them what I thought I did to harm them. And when I was finished, I was to say to them, did I leave anything out, or would you like to say something about this? And then I was to be quiet, and I was to listen to what they would say, and I was never, ever, ever to say I'm sorry, ever. People have been hearing sorry from me my entire life. When I say I'm sorry, people hear Charlie Brown teacher. Wah, 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 wah. They don't hear that. So I'm to say, when they're done, I say, is there anything I can do to make that right? And then if it's reasonable and feasible, and I'm not going to harm myself or my family or anyone else, I do that. And then I experience a lot of relief. All along the way doing this, right? I found God in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to believe that God was going to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. That God could and would if he was sought. And I was seeking. I was getting relief, and my faith was getting deeper. And then they showed me that now that I stepped into this new God consciousness, right, my job was now to grow in its effectiveness and usefulness by continuing to do inventory on a regular basis. And they told me different ways to do that, the spot check inventory, ask myself some questions, am I resentful, fearful, dishonest, afraid, right? Do I need to discuss something immediately with somebody? And they showed me how to do prayer and meditation as it's laid out in here. It's different from my prayer life and my meditative life now. But how it's done in here is a very specific way. I have a zabuton. I have a meditation room. I have incense. My mind couldn't stop for 2 seconds at some time in my life. I can meditate now for 2 hours and just wake up and not know where the time went. That's not the meditation they're talking about in here. That's just something I found, right? This book is suggestive only. We know little. More will be revealed, right? And other things were revealed to me, right? These other forms of prayer and meditation were revealed to me. But the prayer and meditation is very specific in here. Upon awakening, when I retire at night, I review my day. The review is the meditation. When I ask God for direction, that's the prayer. So the instructions for prayer and meditation in the 11th step are found right on 84, 86, in and around those pages. Thank you. And that changed my life even more. I was rocketing into whatever dimension I was rocketing into. Today, I can honestly say to you that prayer and meditation is the very foundation of my life. I wouldn't do without it. I think the 12 and says, like, without air and water. And that's how it is for me. That's how I stay connected to the God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he said, if you do those things, something's going to happen to you. You're going to have a spiritual awakening as a result of that. And that's exactly what happened to me. My spirit was awoken. How was that awoken? Well, if selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles, then what's the opposite of that? Unselfishness. Thinking of others. And that's exactly what happened to me. I was in a meeting in South Boston. There was 100 people in the room, and a woman was talking about that she had just lost a child. And I started to cry openly in an AA meeting. And there were some serious gangsters in that room. And I didn't care. I felt for that woman. I felt so bad for that woman. And a couple of months later, that same woman talked about an experience in her life that was joyful. And I started to cry. I was so happy for that woman. I started to cry in joy for her. These are the type of spiritual awakenings that I've found in here. In the back of the book, it says educational variety happen over time. You know, the impression is that it should happen suddenly, right? It happens slowly over time for me. My spirit awakens every single day. Every single day. And they said, because of this, your now job is to go out and to help others, to pass this on to somebody else. And I used to try to give people my experience. Like, this is what you need to do. Don't do this, do this, don't do that. You know, that's wrong. Don't do that. That's not what I do anymore. Now what I do, and I sit down and I let the men and women have their own experience with this book. I don't try to give them my experience. I let them have their own experience, their own, to find their own God. So that they too can recover from this illness that's fatal. That's absolutely fatal. So my home group is still on Steele in Swansea, Massachusetts, and they would they wouldn't take kindly if I did not mention the following items. If you have yet not diagnosed yourself as an alcoholic, you can do it very simply. You don't need a pamphlet with 24 or 44 or 12 questions or anything else like that. Ask yourself two questions. If, when you honestly try to, you can't stay away from it, or once you put it into your system, you have little or no control over the amount that you take, you might be an alcoholic. And if you're an alcoholic, you may suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. See, I thought, not only was I powerless over the things that I talked about, I was powerless to affect the psychic change needed to overcome that. That had to come from a power greater than myself. And if I want to know where I am within that, take all those little coins that you have. It says unity, service, and recovery on those, right? We call this sharpening our tools, right? Unity is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Are you going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you with people? So I'm going to answer this for myself, right? I'm going to check myself right now, sharpen my tools. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I've been going to Alcoholics meetings since 1993, and I've never stopped going to meetings. The bottom level is the recovery, and that picks the body, right? The body, the mental, and the spirit, right? Physical, mental, spirit. So the mind is on the recovery piece, right? That's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where am I in the recovery process of Alcoholics Anonymous? I've been through all 12 steps, done multiple full-out inventories. I've made every single amends I could possibly make. Those that I haven't been able to make, I'm willing to make and would do so if the opportunity presented itself. And I take that recovered mind into the service, into the spirit of service. Where am I in the spirit of service? Right now I'm sitting down with a gentleman who's practicing his 10th and 11th step inventories. And I have a meeting in my house that's a steel-on-steel meeting where we check each other just this way on different types of where we are in our home spirit work life. So I'm on all three sides of those triangle. And when I'm all three sides of those triangle, I'm useful and whole, not useless and hopeless like I was the day before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to wrap this up and I'll say Alcoholics Anonymous does not claim a monopoly on sobriety or spirituality. What we have is a set of principles that, if practiced, can lead you to a higher power, your own higher power. That higher power can and will remove your obsession, our obsession to drink, rendering us useful and whole. I'm grateful, and thanks for letting me be here tonight.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Now we have Mike and Angelica for festivities.